Hello, Mr. Fraser. My name is Kayla Pena.
And I'm a lonesome dragon.
Hilton Santos.
Nice to meet you.
We're here at Turner Tech in the virtual Apple, and we're Mr.
Fraser.
Mr. Fraser, first name.
Talmadge.
Mr. Talmadge Fraser. And we're going to ask him a couple of questions. Describe when and where you were born.
I was born in New York City. I am the second oldest of five kids. I'm the only child in my family that was born with a learning disability, which complicated my life a great deal.
Can you tell us a little bit more about childhood?
My childhood was spent with understanding that I was stupid, that because of my inability to read, but back in the 50s and the 60s, there was no such thing as, you know, what somebody didn't like your mama, so when they got some goober dust and put in a footprint, and you were born with some type of a disability. In the black community, if you had some type of something wrong with you, you were taboo, something to be afraid of. So since I was supposed to be disabled and I'm retarded, I had very little interaction with kids of my own age. So.
So, what school did you go to?
I went to a split school between New York and St. Petersburg. So I got the mixture of both types of the civil rights. But the civil rights movement started when I, like, in 1954. I was 4 years old at the time. The civil rights then started bothering me, I'll say, I couldn't, quote, get to know it until I started being around the ages of 10 or 11. When I was good stand, to me, walking back in the bus was normal because that's where my mother went. But when I came south from New York, it was more prevalent. Because in New York, you rode where you wanted to. But my big awakening in the civil rights movement happened when I was about 14, when I came to the south to live and visit my relatives in the south. And kind of found out what it meant to ride in the back of the bus. What it meant to, you couldn't go downtown and try on clothes. You couldn't go to a restaurant and say, I need, if you want to get something to eat, you got to go around the back. And a lot of people say, I ain't going. The kids today probably say, I ain't going. Back in those days, you would, or you got a stick bounced off your head. So you do what you have to do in those times.
Okay. When you were 14, that's when you said you finally had an awakening about what it really meant to, you know, be colored, or to whites, what it really meant to be colored. Like, what were your thoughts and feelings about that then? Like, how did you, was that like, oh my God, I hate whites, or were you like, you were confused?
Well, see, I'm mixed. I don't look it, but I'm mixed. My mother was half white, and my father was black. So my mother taught us not to hate, regardless of it. But I saw my mother go through a lot of hate because of the color of her skin. She wasn't accepted by either group. She wasn't accepted by whites. She wasn't accepted by blacks. So my mother said she wanted to make sure that her children were very dark. So she found my father. When my father laid down in the road, you run him over because you wouldn't be able to see him. That's how dark he was. And the first three kids came out like my father, dark. The last two kids came out looking like my mother. So we had that balance in the house. So what we would do, if we really wanted something nice from downtown, we'll send my mother downtown to get it. And they would never know that she was white. We got smart, we'll send one of my little sisters in the store to get stuff, the better stuff, but they're way outside. So it kind of balanced itself out a little bit. So it's kind of like being in the middle of integration. And I went to a Catholic school, and most of the nuns were all white. So I had like a mixed view of it. A lot of times we weren't really exposed to a lot of prejudice because we lived in our little shabby community. But you know, it was there. We knew that when we came out of the community, things that we could and could not do, such as go downtown. You know, they said water fountain. The white water fountain was always nice and clean. The black water fountain was always dirty. You went to white bathrooms, the white bathroom was spotless. Black bathroom with a stand outside. You know, it came out better. So I knew what it was and how to do it. But I grew up not hating anyone. According to my religious background between Baptist and Catholic, we weren't taught to hate. And I think that's one good thing because, you know, hatred is something that when you teach one of your children, that child teaches their children, and before you know it, you got a vicious cycle. So I was taught not to hate. This is the way it was, you accepted it, you dealt with it.
What else do you remember about the days of segregation?
I saw when they would lynch people. and it was carried on the evening news or such and such got lynching. You never really understand lynching until you actually see a body hanging in the tree. That kind of, like in St. Petersburg, when they hung this guy, just for whistling at a black woman, they hung him. And that's that part, at that time, I think I got a little bit, hatred a little bit going, a little bit. But you actually have to see it in the viciousness of it. It's not just something that the act is carried out, it's that love of it that frightens you. It's the love of hating a person. You know, my mother told me once, she said, well, if white and blacks are so different, then why can't we share each other's blood? And hearing stories about white people dying rather than take black blood, I never understood things like that.
So, do you have a haunting memory of discrimination?
I think this one, when my mother got sick in St. Petersburg, and we were more closer to a white hospital than a black hospital, they took her, and when they found out she was really black, they put her out, and made her go to the black hospital.
Your community, so you said where you lived was very nice and tight. Like, where exactly did you live when you moved back down to?
Okay, we lived in a place called St. Petersburg, Florida. Mm-hmm. And in St. Petersburg, everybody lived, if you lived in Memphis Town, or you lived over in what we call it the central part where I grew up at, we had lawyers, doctors, teachers, everybody lived in the community. Some of the teachers had some of the nicest homes, the doctors and dentists, we all lived in that one little, within, I guess, about a geographical 2 mile area.
Was it integrated or segregated?
It was segregated. White people lived out in North St. Petersburg, blacks lived in the central, and whites lived way out by the water. We were like in a little middle buffer zone now.
You said you were born in New York, and you said your first realization of the civil rights was when you were 14. So what year did you move to Miami?
I came to Miami in about, what was it, about 60, what was it, about maybe, I don't even think now, it was the right time. When I first came to Miami to live with my cousin, it was about maybe like 69, something in that area. And I started working, you know, for the city and doing things. And Miami really, at that time, had went through a lot of turmoil, I think. I think you had a lot of people at that during that time feeding into the frenzy, making money off stupidity. And what it was, at the time, it was almost like a three thing here going on in Miami. You had whites against blacks, whites against Cubans and blacks, because in 62 you got an influx of the Cuban community coming in. And then that's when the Cuban blacks started having problems, because the whites were accepting the Cubans. So now we had two people we had to face. You had to face the whites and the Cubans, but the whites were telling the Cubans, if you want to make it here in Miami, you have to dislike the blacks. So then you got all these people all fighting against each other. At the same time, white America was getting up on both of us, because they kept us fighting against each other, and they sitting out up here, okay, let them fight it out. And then blacks, for some reason, the drugs came into the scene. And blacks started getting more on drugs, stopped going to work. And then they started, well, the Cubans taking over. No, the Cubans did not take over. We gave it to them. We stopped going to work. We stopped helping each other. And they did. The Cubans came over here, and they took advantage of what black America was not doing. They built their communities by coming together. The Cubans came over. You have 5 Cuban families living in one house, working together. Before you know it, they bought the house. Now over here, you got 5 blacks that can't stay 5 minutes together. But they wanted to start blaming each other. And now we end up with a situation where everybody starts fighting each other. And they start teaching their kids to do the thing. So now that generation told the next generation, and so you know it now, Miami's still split. Miami has almost what? Yeah, blacks, Haitian, whites, Hispanics, Korean. All those people, everybody should be working together. But they have been taught by their fathers to fight against each other.
Okay. Touching back to segregation, what do you remember about local or national efforts to bring total civil rights to blacks?
A whole lot of talk. And if you really want to know to it now, blacks still don't have a whole lot of power, political power here in Miami. There was no intention ever to give them political power. It was to do enough so the government would stop. And those blacks who were doing things to try to bring things up were doing it for their own good. Once they got what they wanted, they went for everybody else. There's never been, to, this is my opinion, of course, there's never been a system in place by blacks to secure their power politically. They just don't do it. And back in the 60s, when you couldn't vote, or you can't vote, what can't do? I'm going down, I'm going to do it. I'm going to fight to do it. Then if you got it, what do you do with it? Nothing.
What other memories do you have, like, about the changes in the 1960s?
I think the 60s were actually being able to go out and buy a house where you wanted to. With your dollars and stuff, and you could start moving out. If you go back and look at this early, the late 60s and early 70s, a lot of blacks started moving out of the Overtown area into Liberty City. It was Liberty City, then went out to Browns, Carroll City. So that was the progression. And as blacks moved outward, blacks began to move further. So it was like, house is one thing, be able to acquire land and do things. That's what I really like. We could buy them. And then the blacks in my generation started doing it. Buying houses, going to school, but then everything started taking off.
How did your community feel when integration started? When schools were beginning to integrate and blacks and whites were beginning to live together?
In one sense, we hated it, in a sense. I did, because we lost our schools. No city wanted to integrate the schools, make it equal. But equal is not busing me to a white school, then tearing down all my history at my other schools. So it's like, you took me out over here, you say it's going to be better, you gave me some textbooks, but they did very little to change the mindset of the people that were teaching me. Integration can't make people teach you. Some people, like for instance, if I take a picture that's substandard, and I give you A on it, am I helping you? Yes, no, I'm not. If you're going to make integration work, it has to be equal for everybody. It was not equal. There's simply, whites didn't want to go to black schools, so all of a sudden, our schools became dilapidated, unsafe for white kids to come in. Then when they moved them out, they tore them down. And you tore down that, you tore down the history. Like, for instance, when integration came, black kids had no history in Atlanta. And my kid, when he integrated, the first thing they took away from us was we had to stop playing black schools in football. We had to start playing white schools. You know, we drive a bus up, white kids throwing bricks at us. You know, you go on the field, you score a touchdown, referee take it from you. You know, so that, the unfairness of it is what I really remember about immigration. The taking away the schools, the taking away all of our history, and putting us in a situation where people didn't want us there. And they truly didn't want us there. You know, you had fights. It's still separated. The whites sit on one side of the cafeteria, the blacks sit on the other side of the cafeteria. You got the same thing now. Blacks have their little group, whites have their little group, Hispanics got their little group. So what has changed? Nothing.
School when they integrated, you had some racist teachers or something?
Yeah, we had some real racist teachers. We had some teachers that would call you boy. You know, you stupid, you ain't gonna make it. They did very little to encourage me, especially having a learning disability. You know, I had one teacher, and I gotta give credit for it. That one teacher, her name was Mr. Hernandez. It wasn't also the white teachers. You got some black teachers gave up on us too. Had one teacher that believed enough in me to work with me, and that teacher was Mr. Hernandez. Everybody else didn't have time for me.
Do you remember
Virginia Key Beach? Good part.
Virginia Key.
Virginia Key. I remember about Virginia Key Beach. We went there, and like every other town, all the black people were swimming over. That's what it was. And that's not a fight not to preserve it, but there is still. To deserve what? The history that they don't care nothing about. It's the mere fact that they didn't care nothing about it until they want to take it away and build condos on it. In St. Petersburg, we had what we call Moe's Hole. That was a swimming hole. Here, it was Virginia Key. So, my thing about Virginia Key is that the history is there, the party is there, But we got to go a little bit more beyond that now. You know, most blacks, they want to go to Virginia Key. And that part of it is all about being accepted. What Virginia Key need to be used for is to have build something there that we're going to serve and get you about 50 or 60 of these young kids that's having serious problems and build a center for them to come and rechange themselves, redo something for themselves. Because right now, they need help.
Okay. I know this taping has been short, very informative, but short. So do you have anything else you would like to add?
Yeah.
Memories or views?
No, I'd like to leave one thing on this tape, is that Black America needs to re-identify who they are. Dressing up for 28 days and turn around stabbing each other in the back the rest of the month is not Black history. We need to understand where we are and what we're doing to ourselves. And not one thing I'm going to leave today, the biggest problem with Black America today is Black America. We are our own worst enemies. For the black kids in this school that's trying to make it, for everyone that's in this school that's trying to make a difference, I can give you 60 that ain't doing nothing with their lives. And guess who they blame for it? The white man.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fraser. It has been a pleasure.
Thank you.